Lunch with Leon.
Do people really buy jewellery and expensive watches and expensive luggage airside on their way out? And welcome to another episode of Lunch with Leon. My social media watchers will know I've been overseas quite a bit recently, including at the Australia-British Infrastructure Catalyst, which was in Sydney and Brisbane. I've got some clips from that event, and I'll bring those to you shortly. I also found on Waiheke Island, New Zealand, probably the furthest away old London bus, the one that's furthest away from home of anyone. So 11,000 odd miles, RLH45, an old London bus from 1950. Also, since we last met, I finished my year as Master of the Worshipful Company of Carmen, an ancient city livery company with great charitable ambition. Again, over on my YouTube channel, you will have seen the company's annual cart marking ceremony this year, which celebrated the wettest cart marking in living memory. But we did have a really good time indeed. This takes place every July. It celebrates the Carmen's original purpose, which was to mark carts in the City of London in order to give them permission to ply for hire. It's sort of early version of ultra-low emission zone and congestion charging. And days after this episode goes live, we'll be at the Lady Mayor's Show. That's not the Lord Mayor's Show, because this year's Lord Mayor is a lady, Dame Sue Langley, and she's the 697th Lord Mayor of London. You'll see some really interesting vehicles in the Lady Mayor's Show, and including the one that I'm driving. So finally to this episode, and we turn for a change to aviation, and my guest is Karen Dee, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Airports UK. And I started out by asking her what it does.
Yeah, Airports UK, we are the trade association for all UK airports. So we've got, I think, 52 airport members. So all the large commercial airports, but and lots of the smaller, you know, airfields and GA airfields, airports as well. And we're also about 150 or so sort of supply chain members who engage with us. But principally what we're here to do, like most trade bodies, is to, you know, liaise and provide that link between our members and government and make sure that we're influencing the policies that come out that actually have an impact on the success or otherwise of airports.
Amazing. And all that's against the background of a bit of noise, of course, from the environmentalists about the damage to the climate and aviation and so on. But on the other hand, there's an insatiable demand for people to travel, yeah. Isn't there? And yeah. that's how we do our business.
Yeah. And it is one of those. I mean, I think we just see it as a challenge for us to make happen. So essentially, lots of people want to fly. They love the benefits of it. It connects people. It connects with their families, with their friends. It promotes travel. It promotes, you know, cultural awareness. Huge benefits to on a personal level of travel. And that's even before you get into what are the sort of business economic advantages that aviation can bring. And yet we also know that there are impacts both in terms of the climate and then also for communities who are in and around airports. So members very conscious of all of that. And I think we've got a really good plan actually on sustainability, certainly on the carbon side, for making sure that we continue to grow, we can also tackle the carbon emissions, so that essentially we're able to say, no, it's okay, we are decoupling growth from carbon, and you can rest assured that the industry is committed to it, and therefore we hope we can still deliver all of those benefits in a useful way for the wide variety of people that needs to use it. One of my key things is aviation, something we're really good at in the UK before COVID, if we come to talk about that, when we weren't very active. You know, we had the largest market. UK is the largest aviation market in Europe and the third largest in the world. It's something we're really good at, and largely private enterprise in the UK. So we get good value, and, you know, that competition drives good value product for passengers. And that's why we see people traveling.
And freight as well, of course, because for as long as we want avocados in February, it's going to come in by air, isn't it?
Sure. Absolutely. And lots of other things. So freight is often overlooked, but Heathrow will always tell you that it's the biggest port by value in the UK for freight. And all of those sort of time sensitive, high value goods that need to get to their destinations quickly will come by air freight.
Sure.
So, yeah. But, you know, not just Heathrow, around the country, what we know is all of the connectivity that you get from flights. Not just freight only flights, I might add, because a lot of freight comes in the belly hold of ordinary passenger flights. So they can go around the country, and that allows businesses wherever they're based, you know, north, south, east, west, to get their goods to market. So,
indeed, I'm with you entirely on that. I am, as we're recording this, I've been home from Sydney for the last 24 hours, so I got the chance to go to the new Western Sydney Airport.
Ah.
Which is extraordinary. I mean, it's huge.
I've not been there.
It's an hour and a half from Sydney, so it's a hell of a journey. And I had a great conversation with Simon Hickey, who's the chief executive there. And they're going to start with freight because it's a new airport and the development in the area is, you know, sort of far from complete. But they're clearly planning very much ahead. And I'm sure you would agree, it seems to me, that the UK has to keep pace with this because cities are building big new airports. Dubai is another example of that, and we have to stay in that game, don't we?
Yeah, it is. And competitiveness is one of those things that what we can deliver to the UK economy, but also competitiveness of UK airports as a place to attract new routes in from the airlines, you know, is really important. Some of our London airports have constraints and need to grow, and we quite rightly have due process in the UK for doing that, and it takes some time, but it is really important that we keep pace for that, because airlines, as I say, are mobile, and people will put their assets where they can make the most money and get travel, you know, take the most people. So it's really important, I think, for the UK economy as an island trading nation. We need that connectivity, that global connectivity that only airports really can deliver for us. So, you know, what you can't do is just because aviation is something that the UK has been good at doesn't mean that, you know, we can rest on our laurels. And that's why, you know, we're really pleased actually with what current government ministers have said about supporting, recognizing the role that aviation plays in the economy and supporting capacity enhancements, you know, subject to all those conditions that we talk about on noise and carbon and air quality. Actually, it's really good to have the government saying, no, we support that, and we recognize you've got that role, now come forward with proposals. So
really somebody good. In the industry said to me only week before last that the UK has got the right number of runways, it just doesn't have them in the right place. Does that sound like something somebody would say?
It sounds like something somebody would say, but probably not me. and you would not expect me to say that. No, I mean, I think what is important is we're a market economy in the UK, and actually most of our airports are competing with each other. I think it's clear that there is additional demand that is coming around the country, not just in London and the South East, but you can't necessarily force routes to develop and connectivity to develop in the places that, you know, you centrally want them or where you desire them. And we do, as I say, if everything's privately financed at the moment, then, you know, we're asking investors to take a punt on what are you willing to invest and what risk are you willing to take in order to build that business. So, at the moment, we've got a lot of capacity constrained airports, particularly in the Southeast. Mm. So, but it isn't just the Southeast.
I've been at a couple of conferences, and it's across the whole transport gamut, you know, road, rail, aviation, shipping, and so on. And a few things came out of it. One is that we're all in the same place on skills, like we don't have enough of the right sort of skills. And it almost seems to some of the delegates that we were talking to that education system isn't really producing the sorts of people that we need in these sort of industries. Does that apply for airports as well?
I think it does, certainly to a certain extent. And if you think, you know, like a number, particularly in transport, you know, we have a large number of highly skilled, well, we've got skill, we've got jobs in airports across the full range. We've got very highly technical skilled jobs and, you know, others that are more entry level. But across the piece, actually ensuring that you have enough people is really, really important. And we are having to compete with all of those other industries, construction, transport, all of those things where we're all wanting the same kind of skills at the same time. And in some of our areas, you know, like they have in roads and freight, for example, we have areas where it's an aging workforce and it's highly skilled and it takes a long time for people to qualify. If we think about air traffic controllers, for example, that is the pipeline for that is really important. So I do think that there's a skills issue. I think it's something that some of the airports are, you know, facing head on. There's clearly a role for things like apprenticeships and for the government to look at how it manages that through the education system. But I think as employers, airports are also, you know, looking to play their part either with their own direct apprenticeships or Stansted, for example, has got a college, a sixth form college, that is, for, you know, specifically for aviation. So I think there are things that businesses can do, but I am slightly concerned that it takes some time. And if lots of the industries are all in the same boat, then it's not something we can just rely on to be solved for us.
No, it's interesting. So, you know, as you probably know, I was for a few years a director of a bus company in West London, where they would argue that Heathrow sucked out competent engineers, cleaners, drivers, and managers, arguably because it was a nicer job. Because in the round, people who are using airports are generally in a good mood, which isn't always the case for getting on a bus in Twickenham.
Yeah.
So it was argued quite strongly that the airports were a magnet for skills, to the expense of some of the other transport providers. But actually, it always seemed to me that aviation was a more natural place for younger people because it's the future and it's exciting and so on. And so it was just a more attractive career in many ways.
Yeah. I don't know whether it's true, whether, you know, we're the airports are taking people away from the buses. I mean, I think certainly airports will need a lot of skills and across the full range. And they are certainly big employers in their own localities. I think, you know, not that I keep harking back to COVID, but one of the things that we found, you know, Crawley was one of the worst hit local areas because so many people relied on Gatwick Airport for their employment.
Oh, right.
So, you know, it's that they are big contributors to the local economies, and that naturally does have an impact. And, you know, the airports will have to compete pay wise to ensure that they do get the skills that that they need to carry on. So,
I'm having a slightly bad moment about COVID now because it was quite a while ago.
But, I know. We're trying to move on, aren't we?
I had my COVID jab this morning, so I've got a sore arm and a slight fever. But yes, those were terrible days, and I'd never really thought about that before. If the airport is such a major employer and suffers such an extraordinary downturn, then that ripple effect through the local economy all the way through the supermarkets and cafes and so on is going to be huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. And well, it was awful. And things are much better now, obviously. But, you know, we always said at the time airports were sort of one of the first to be hit because of the travel bans and last to come out because it was the travel restrictions were kept in longer than, you know, sort of domestic activity. So we were first in and last out. But, you know, actually this year, not all, but the vast majority of airports are now back to where we were pre-COVID. But it has taken that amount of time to, you know, rebuild the sort of the finances, the connectivity, the routes and the passenger numbers. You know, that's taken quite a long time.
No, and indeed, there's still a proportion of mask wearing in airports and on airplanes. As I said, I've been through a few recently, and clearly there are some people who are still taking, you know, some extra care, if you like, as part of...
Oh, well, and we see that, don't we, in our travel on the tube or in and around London, where we're based. We do see people still doing that, but thankfully it's not a requirement for us. And now we're, you know, in a good place, and aviation's back up and running and raring to go.
No, absolutely. And the technology in aviation for me, I love to watch it because to some extent what aviation does today is what rail and road does, tomorrow. So we're seeing this incredible improvement in fuel efficiency and moving towards SAF and ultimately net zero and so on, which I think is just amazing. And it's dealing with plenty of the previous criticism about emissions and things, isn't it? So, I mean, aviation is making some fabulous strides forward.
Yeah, I think so. And that's I mean, one of our, we think our claims to fame in the for the UK industry is that we were one of the first sectors globally to commit to net zero by 2050 and to develop the roadmap that will allow us to do that. And the reason that we did that is because we know that aviation is a hard to abate sector. You know, you're not going to suddenly find a technology that you can, you know, introduce overnight when you're putting, you know, 200 people up in the sky at 30,000 feet. Safety is always going to be your priority. So it's not something that you're going to take lightly. But we had that plan, and you know that through the combination, as you just talked about, sustainable aviation fuels, which are much lower in terms of carbon emissions, not quite yet carbon free, but lower emissions. Things like planning our airspace better, which are we you know is a challenge in its own right because that's essentially the infrastructure in the sky, and we have to go through our own version of the planning system to make changes there. But again, safety focuses on that. And then, you know, new future technologies that are currently sort of in the offing, but not in place yet, like hydrogen fuels. All of those things are things that aviation collectively, so ourselves, the airlines, airports, and the aerospace sector is working to collectively to say, right, here are the technologies. This is how we get to net zero by 2050. This is the combination of measures that we need. So let's start investing now. And that's why, you know, we work through with government on sustainable aviation fuels to get they've introduced a mandate and a revenue certainty mechanism. But, you know, I think we're certainly on a clear path towards it. But it's a path that takes constant effort. But luckily, my members are absolutely committed to delivering that, because we see that as our license to grow.
Indeed. And we've had the same on the roads, frankly. We've had to cope with the decoupling of congestion and pollution because now you can get rid of the pollution, but you still have the congestion. So we've still got a volume problem. It's just that there used to be two evils and now there's only one of
Now
them
there's just
because
one.
a city full of zero emission vehicles is still a city going nowhere if there's no space to move. Yeah, so
Exactly.
we've had to face on road, and indeed will also be the case in due course on rail. So airports always remind me of, I mean, they are towns in their own right, aren't they? You know, there's a water requirement and a waste requirement and a power requirement, even just to keep the lights on and do all the things. And that's before anybody starts to fly any aeroplanes. And they look like well-designed towns.
I think they're, I mean, they're hugely complex, actually. And if you spend quite a lot of time in airports, like I do, not always traveling, I might say, which is, you know, that's the fun bit. But I love being in airports anyway. But what you do find is there's so many things that are happening that we take for granted. So they are buildings, they're work sites, there are, you know, engineering activities, all of those things, and all of the things that we would have in any business like construction, health and safety, all of those things come together, and you then have, you know, a runway and planes taking off and border control, all of the things that we're pets and, you know, it's such a huge and varied activity, but I think that's what makes it interesting. But that does mean that, you know, we are safety, security, process, compliance are always at the forefront. I mean, compliance is and safety are for all transport, actually, but particularly in airports where they become so complex, you need those management systems in place to ensure that you're become a efficient operation.
Indeed. And one of the people I was talking to on this visit, I was talking to Joseph Butler from Jacobs. He's a global principal aviation buildings planning and design management. And he was discussing the genius that was Stansted, in as much as it has a way of keeping people moving forward, even though when Norman Foster designed the building and erected it, I guess in the 1990s, it wasn't the place it is now. Ryanair wasn't the dominant low-cost carrier that it is there now. But the genius actually did design a building where people are going to be able to keep moving forward and designed it in such a way as they're able to extend it on a modular basis without disrupting the flow and the as well, which I thought was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And I think it's something that you take for granted a little bit as a passenger when you're just moving through. And yet when it goes wrong, you notice very quickly. And I always have enjoy, you know, feeding back to my members when I come back where I found that a overseas airport is, you know, doing things wrong. And it is all about the design and how you keep people moving around through the processes, because there are so many mandatory processes that you have to go through. If you've got a small part of the airport that doesn't work properly because you're asking people to drop bags and then join another queue and the two queues go across each other, everything goes wrong and people become frustrated. Whereas if you've got, you know, if you've got clever designers who just smooth all of that out and keep people moving, if people are moving, they don't get frustrated.
They
can still be in a queue, but they can see that they're progressing.
And we were taught, weren't we, in management school, that it doesn't matter the diameter of the pipe, it's the narrowest bit that constrains all the movement. You know, that's the maximum volume you're going to get through of any pipe is the narrowest bit. Then you add the human bit, which is how miserable and unhappy they are about the whole thing.
Exactly. And especially if you're a British person and you can see people where the queues are no longer, you know, if you can't be sure that people are not pushing in the queue, then we get very upset about that.
No, indeed we do. Indeed. I mean, the other one that for me that's fascinating, the transformation that aviation has done for us, I was just thinking on safety, because things are now very much better in the passenger transport industry generally.
Yeah.
But aviation sort of really showed us the way on safety, and in such a way now that our construction arrangements, the way in which people are trained, the way in which people are required to document what it is they do and so on. I mean, it always feels to me that aviation led the way because of the quite right requirement for safety when you're flying, but actually we now do it as a matter of course, walking, building, shopping, sitting, whatever we're doing, the safety imperative is always there now. I think airports are very strong on that.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it is just part of the culture of an airport now, where all of the staff are trained, and that's absolutely how they function, and it has to be like that because it is a risky environment by its very nature. So I think the industry, certainly, I mean, I've only been in airports for 9 years, you do notice that it's just always been that way, and that's because the regulator is on it and is very clear about what the requirements are. But there is a very open and honest conversation about when things are not being complied with properly and when things do go wrong, which they will. But you never have a risk-free environment. The important thing is that you've got proper processes in place to ensure that you minimise those, that people are properly trained, that they know that the importance of why the rules are there. And I think that that's what airports are really good at. And we see it because we run something just with our members called UK Airports Health and Safety Week.
In fact, you've just had it.
We run it every year.
You've just had it.
Exactly. And we had the awards recently. So we ran it in the summer. And all of the airports across the country have a wide range of activities, all sorts of things. They will invite school children in to come and look at around the airport and see what they're doing. They'll run CPR courses. The imagination that's in there for the purpose of health and safety is just phenomenal. And we really love it. That's why we run the awards. But they do that with all of their staff. And also importantly, because airports, a lot of the people that are working on the airports are not actually airport employees. You've got airlines, you've got ground handlers, you've got a wide variety of people. And by having these activities, they bring all of those sort of the airport campus, we would call it, together to just say, look, we all share in the need to keep this place safe. Come and do these activities.
Karen, that's such a strong point, which until you mention it, I'm sure my listeners and I hadn't thought of, that not all the airport employees are employed by the airport. There's so many other employees. And so these safety awards are very important because we're talking about bringing multiple cultures together all in one place for the benefit of the whole place and the
that's
people
right.
in it.
We're just the we're the infrastructure providers, and you know the airlines are there with their own teams and their own activities and a wide variety of others that are all, you know, happen to be there and need to be safe in the same way that we are.
No, no, indeed. Well, I looked through your winners and so on for the week that you've just had at the time of this recording. So small, medium and large airports are doing really well in their own areas. But the thing that came through in everything I read was about the leadership and the innovation that was being displayed. And I think we should all be very proud of that. And as you might imagine, this podcast has got quite a wide audience, but I suspect aviation is not in the biggest group of people who listen
We'll
to
see
it.
if we can change that.
But there's plenty for people to learn, you know, in the other sectors on the road and rail side, from the passenger and from the freight side. There's a lot to learn, I think, in this area, especially since, how can I say, each incremental step forward on health and safety now is a bit harder than the last time, because the low-hanging fruit was done quite some time ago. The legislation has ratcheted up. Culturally, things have changed. Generations have moved on. Some of the older people who weren't used to some of the requirements and precautions have actually retired and left the sector, and the younger people, who perhaps a bit more enlightened, maybe a little bit more environmentally sensitive and so on, have joined and so on. So it's a never ending job.
Yeah, well, it's ever evolving, isn't it? And I think that the point that you made about leadership is really important as well. And it's one thing that I'm lucky. I have a board that's largely made up of airport CEOs, and they take the Health and Safety Week and it, you know, really seriously and get fully involved. I suppose the other thing that I think is we're quite lucky on as well in aviation is that it is a global industry. So it shares its learnings around the world. So hopefully that means, you know, I think, as I say, UK is a pretty well developed market and will be pretty well developed in health and safety. But again, we're also ensuring that those messages are shared with countries that perhaps aren't quite as far ahead as some of our airports. And that's
indeed.
Great as well. And we learn from them too.
And that's entirely right, because we as passengers are not passing through one airport, we're passing through two, and we'd like to have the highest possible standard at the other end as well as this end.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that is very important. And we must never forget that a journey has a beginning and an end.
And a middle.
Yes, and indeed a middle. And I just think the other thing that occurs to me as a traveller, there's a frame of mind necessary for this, isn't there? You want to be excited about the journey, you want to be happy about the journey, you want to have enough time to get through the whole process, because it's pretty grim if it's a stressful experience and so on. But I know what I was always wanted to ask you, as I browse the availability of retail and indeed luxury brands, airside retail, do people really buy jewellery and expensive watches and expensive luggage airside on their way out?
Yeah, they do. Or some people, I don't, not expensive watches and jewellery, but, you know, I think it's quite an interesting one, and you won't always find the same mix of shops in the same in all airports, and that will depend, you know, the audience and the people traveling through will depend on the mix of airlines and all of those things. But what's great about, and perhaps is not always obvious, but what's great about the retail offering is that it helps. So because we are in the UK largely privately funded, actually, if you are able to make money and revenue from retail, then that becomes an important part of your income, which allows you to make sure that you can keep the amounts that you have to charge airlines to as low as possible. And that has allowed, I think, you know, why the UK has led the way in, you know, the very low cost carriers, is because we've got that mix. We can make up revenues from other things that, you know, are attractive to the traveling public, and that helps support keeping the airfares down.
Sure.
So, you know, it's an important element. One of the things that we often talk to government about, because of changes they made to VAT free shopping, and we don't have arrivals duty free in the UK yet, whereas they do now post Brexit. We could have that, but we don't yet in the UK, and they do on the continent. So, constant thing for us to do, because they are, you know, quite a lot of purchases will be things that just take your mind. But it would surprise you, I think, that some people actually fly to places because there's a collector's thing that they need. So
right?
It's quite unusual.
And two other from my amateur observations only. One is that there isn't necessarily a correlation between the retail offering and the low-cost airlines, because there are plenty of wealthy people who are travelling to their second homes, for example, on low-cost airlines,
Absolutely.
Whose spend per head might be quite generous in the duty-free shop. And the other one, as somebody who always used to enjoy the fact that you could fly through Dublin or Shannon and clear US immigration before you got on the plane, that actually both immigration and duty-free are the wrong way around. Immigration should be before you board the plane, because then you've got the whole journey to look through the list and make sure it's all right. And duty-free should be at the far end, because that will save carrying all
all the way
that liquor across on the plane. But there's no way we're going to change that between us. But it did always occur to me that they're the wrong way around.
And it's just one of those things, isn't it? We have certain processes that we have to go through. And I think you were talking about what we try to do all the way through as airports is make those mandatory processes, which are there for very good reasons, but do make people nervous sometimes. So if you're going through security, for some people that's stressful. Or, you know, all you can do is try and make it as seamless as possible so that those very necessary processes, which are there for a very good reason, actually are as stress-free as they can be, and then make it a pleasant environment for them when they're waiting. Aviation plays such an important role in the UK. You know, people, we love travelling. We are an island, so, you know, we don't always have the best weather. It's great to holiday in the UK, but if we have, can get, you know, a wide variety of different opportunities for a good price, then we think that that's a really good thing for people and for society, for culture. And we need to work hard with government to make sure that, A, that they're recognising that role, that recognising that people value it, and they don't always shout about it, and to make sure that we continue to be competitive in that.
Amazing. Karen, we could talk all day about this, because it is fascinating, and we could talk a lot. And I know this is going to be hugely interesting, because if we're to do good stuff in transport, then we have to learn from each other across the UK sectors, as well as learning what we learn internationally. It occurs to me loads of the things are common, the skills, the net zero, the consequences of COVID, and employment and automation, and all those sorts of things are common. So I think it's fascinating to learn from you about what's going on at Airports UK. So Karen, I'd like to thank you very much indeed for joining us today. I know that the listeners are going to really, really enjoy this episode. It's been absolutely delightful. I've been talking to Karen Dee, who is the Chief Executive of Airports UK. You will find them at airportsuk.org, so please go and look up everything that's going on at Airports UK. Lunch with Leon is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. You'll find them at passengertransport.co.uk. And we'll be back with another episode very soon. In the meantime, Karen Dee, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lunch with Leon is presented by Leon Daniels, and this episode featured Karen Dee. Lunch with Leon is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. Please leave us a review or a rating wherever you get your podcasts.